Hello and welcome to a special podcast by IPES Food, the international panel of experts on sustainable food systems. In this special edition, our podcast features Professor Melissa Leach in conversation with Professor Martin Cole, discussing science policy for global food security governance. Professor Leach is the director of the Institute for Development Studies in the UK and a member of IPES Food. Professor Cole is head of the School of Agriculture, Food and Wine of the Faculty of Sciences of the University of Adelaide, Australia, and current chairperson of the steering committee of the high-level panel of experts on food security and nutrition, commonly referred to as the HLPE. The past few months have witnessed a growing debate among scientists about how to ensure that global food security policy is guided by rigorous evidence and scientific knowledge. The European Union has established a high-level expert group to assess the needs, potential, feasibility, and approach for an International Platform for Food System Science, or IPFSS. In its initial findings, the expert group has identified the HLPE as one of the primary science policy interfaces in the area of global food and nutrition security. In today's conversation, Professor Leach and Professor Cole discuss the role of the high-level panel of experts of the Committee on World Food Security, the challenges it faces, and how it might be further strengthened. The HLP itself was established in 2009, when the Committee on World Food Security, CFS, underwent reforms in the midst of a global food crisis. The goal of the reform was twofold. First, the reform sought to promote an inclusive approach to global food security governance. In addition to governments, the CFS established a framework for other actors, including civil society and the private sector, to engage in the global debate on food security and nutrition. Second, the reforms aimed to ensure that discussions at the CFS were based on solid evidence and state-of-the-art knowledge about food security and nutrition. The HLPE was thus set up to serve as the science policy interface for the CFS. Its purpose is to support the CFS members in their discussion by providing evidence-based analysis and advice to ensure discussion within the CFS is based on hard evidence and state-of-the-art knowledge. Now, the HLPE has three main functions according to the rules set out by the CFS. First, the HLPE assesses and analyses the current state of food security and nutrition and its underlying causes. Second, the HLPE provides scientific and knowledge-based analysis and advice on specific policy-relevant issues, utilising existing high-quality research data and technical studies. And third, the HLPE identifies emerging issues and helps members prioritise future actions and attentions on key focal areas. What makes the HLPE unique in its structure within the CFS that is intended to both maintain its independence from the political process while ensuring its policy relevance? It is composed of a steering committee of 15 internationally recognised experts from different regions who have a wide range of food security and nutrition expertise. These experts are chosen in an open nomination process by a selection committee based on rigorous standards for quality of expertise, areas of expertise, as well as ensuring regional representation. The steering committee scopes out specific reports on key themes requested by the CFS. The writing of these reports is led by project teams, selected by an oversight group of the steering committee, again with open process for experts to apply to be part of the team. The zero draft and initial draft of the report are open to comments from constituencies of the CFS. Through this democratic process of expert selection and accountability, the HLPE has built significant trust among the many actors engaged in global food security governance. As the world now begins to reassess existing institutions of global food security governance, Professor Leach and Professor Cole discuss the HLPE in further detail.
So thank you, Mathieu. And against that backdrop, I would say it's an absolute delight to have the opportunity to talk with Professor Cole, Martin. And I'd like to begin, Martin, by asking you, can you give us your take on just this brief story about the genesis and role of the HLPE? And what do you think are the most significant key features of its structure that make it, as it were, fit for purpose, if you feel it is, as this key science policy interface?
Well, thanks, Melissa. Yeah, and it's a pleasure to join you on this one. Yeah, look, I think, you know, back in 2008, you know, we were facing global food shortages. We'd had loss of crops in different parts of the world. Then we had the financial crisis of 2009. There was really a recognition of the need to step up in terms of food security. So the high-level panel of experts was really set up to try and provide technical and evidence-based support to the Committee for Food Security. The original chair of the committee was Swami Nathan, who's, you know, kind of generally regarded as one of the fathers of the green revolution of agriculture. He coined the phrase, he said, you know, he kind of coined the phrase that he hoped that this would be, the HLP would be, you know, the coalition of the willing to really work together to eliminate hunger. And so the HLP has been going for 10 years. And I think over that time, has actually, you know, kind of really generated an incredible body of evidence and an increased understanding of the complexities of the issues that we're dealing with in food security.
That's really good to hear. So given this key role of providing independent evidence, could you just say a little bit more about, as it were, who is the HLP? How are members of the panel itself and the project teams who work on particular reports selected?
Yeah, sure. So the current, so we have a steering group within the high-level panel of experts, and we have 15 experts from 15 different countries, actually, different regions. We're there as individual experts. All work is done pro bono. We're selected through an ad hoc selection committee, which is very transparent and inclusive, run through the CFS membership. And, you know, the people on the committee are really from all walks of life, really, in terms of their expertise. So we have people expert in agronomy, policy, agricultural intersection with the environment, water, food systems, ag economics, food science. And so it really is quite a broad, both from a point of view of where people come from, but also their expertise. It really is a transdisciplinary expertise group that comes together. In terms of being independent from the policy process, you know, although the tasks of the high-level panel are set by the Committee for Food Security, the work of the high-level panel of experts is very independent from the policy process. It's very much building on evidence. There's a very well-documented, transparent process of looking at the evidence. So, you know, although the tasks are set by the Food Committee for Food Security, the actual work of the high-level panel of experts and the project teams that it puts together is done very independently and very openly and transparently.
Okay, that's great to hear. And just I'd like to pick up a little bit more on this point about multiple kinds of knowledge, because, of course, food security and nutrition perhaps increasingly are topics that need knowledge and expertise from a multiplicity of disciplines, but also forms of knowledge, maybe including local knowledge, indigenous knowledge, the knowledge of practitioners. And I wondered if you could say a bit more about how the HLP incorporates this diversity of knowledges, perhaps particularly in some of the reports, which are really where the panel obviously has to drill down into the issues. What's done to assemble a project team and make sure it has this necessary sort of multiplicity?
Yeah, look, I think really one key thing of the committee is that at the heart of it, we always focus on the right to food. And we quite often have, you know, very lengthy debates around, you know, we might be talking about different mitigations and different policy options or, you know, the evidence base. But at the end of it, we very often have to ground ourselves back and remind ourselves that really we need to be focused on the right to food. You know, we the more we look at it, the more we realize that the implementation of the right to food is very uneven in practice. So much of the work that we're looking at is you know, kind of to try and underpin the right to food and to make sure, you know, as we make transformational change, that we don't, you know, leave anybody behind. It really, you know, I think the COVID-19 situation is a good example of that, where whenever we, you know, even before COVID-19, what we're seeing is, you know, this the difference between, you know, the when something like COVID-19 happens, that it's the poor and the more vulnerable that are most impacted, in a situation like that. So we quite often have to remind ourselves and ground ourselves, and the people we have in the project teams and in the steering committee are really, we try and make sure that voice of different representation is there very much. So just as CFS has, civil society in there, as well as the private sector mechanisms. As we've, kind of got into food security, we've realized that, we really need to be not just focused on producing more food. We really need to have, food systems approach. We need to be looking at the whole supply chain. If we, think about, we still waste a third of the food that we make. We need to have a food systems approach. And that really means that we need, we need expertise across the supply chain. We need food scientists. We need nutritionists, agronomists, economists. So it really does need a transdisciplinary approach in the solution space.
Okay, I couldn't agree more. And those are great examples. But even within this broad shared emphasis on the right to food and on food systems and transformations in food systems, I imagine there must be many instances where there isn't clear consensus on how to get there, perhaps where there are different pathways at stake, different roles for different actors, public and private sector, or different kinds of innovations. And from my experience of the HLP, there's often quite a lot of the reports sort of reveal that controversy. I wonder if you could say a little bit more, perhaps with some examples of how the HLP reports have dealt with issues where there is no consensus. What do you do about that? What do you see as the role of the HLP in these really controversial topics?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question, Melissa, and we quite often wrestle with this one. I think right from the outset, one of the principles of the HLP was not necessarily to, to kind of be able to resolve where there are divergent views, but I think to present why there are divergent views. So actually present both sides of the argument, present the evidence base. So a lot of what we do is actually, kind of really looking into the literature and the evidence base and to present the case for both sides. Very often, I always think we might not have all the answers, but we certainly have richer questions. And in laying things out like that, I think it allows, people who have to take our recommendations and convert them into policy. It allows them to kind of see both sides of the argument and to see the evidence base on both sides. One of the key, I think just a final one on this one, one of the key principles in the latest report, one of the latest reports on the global narrative, is really this recognition that, we think about food systems in different parts of the world. We really need to be cognizant that the solutions in different parts of the world will need to be context specific. Mm-hmm. So in our recommendations, it's very important that we allow for that context specific implementation of policy and the solutions to play out, in an appropriate manner, depending on where you are in different parts of the world.
I think that's extremely important because we've of course got differences of context geographically, also differences of position and perspective, I guess, socially and across different groups according to who they are.
Exactly.
So in a way, what you're saying is that rather than gloss over those and present food security and nutrition as clear problems to be solved with ready solutions, actually legitimacy lies in exposing controversies and where they come from. That's a different kind of objectivity in a sense, isn't it?
Exactly.
So perhaps I could then ask you a little bit more about, given this and given this approach, which I think would be very much in keeping with what we've learned about science policy interfaces, the science policy literature over many, many decades, this kind of more deliberative process is actually really important. How then could you tell us a little bit more about the HLP's impact on policy-making processes within the CFS? I mean, this kind of presentation of evidence, the laying out of the different angles. How does that then contribute to the Committee on World Food Security's effectiveness as I know, the foremost inclusive international intergovernmental platform? How does this interface actually work?
Yes, I think. Well, I think the, you know, we do, the committee really does a number of things. I mean, we do work on critical and emerging issues. So that's been very kind of useful, I think, to inform stakeholders, national governments, and other organisations in terms of what we're seeing in terms of the emerging issues. We also use issue papers for things that are more timely and critical. So, for example, with COVID-19, we didn't really have the time to do the full report process, and we needed to use. So, we used the issue paper process to really get some urgent advice out around COVID-19. The key outcome from HLP is a series of very, well thought through and inclusive reports around particular issues. So, over the years, you know, over the 10 years, we've looked at the issues of land tenure, water, sustainable fisheries, agroecology, innovation. And then through the policy convergent process within the Committee for Food Security, they end up then as, for example, with the land tenure, that was voluntary guidelines for responsible governance of tenure of land, fisheries and forests. Principles for responsible investment in agriculture. There's been the framework for action for food security and nutrition. A couple of more recent examples of that where our work has led into policy recommendations, the voluntary guidelines for food systems and nutrition. And then most recently, quite a complex area, agroecological and other innovations. And we recently got kind of approved through the CFS process for policy recommendations. So, you know, I mean, if you take agroecology, that's a very complex area. It's not just a set of practices. It's also a science, and it's also a social movement. So a lot of divergence there. And so to be able to wrestle with a complex issue like agroecology and how do we really take some of those really excellent principles and how do we scale them? How do we come the other way from large scale agriculture to be more sustainable? Very important and very timely advice. But that, you know, policy convergence is a complex business. And so that was a situation where I think, you know, this science policy interface was really brought in earnest to really kind of lay out some policy recommendations in a very important and timely manner.
Excellent. I think the agroecology case is a really good example where we had multiple knowledges needed and also an area of controversy. So a kind of interface like this, I can see how that has had huge value in really laying out the approach. So what are the challenges that you feel the HLP now faces as a science policy interface? And how do you think these might be addressed? I mean, put another way, how might the HLP be strengthened perhaps to play an even more significant role across the Rome-based agencies like the CFS, but perhaps beyond in a world where food security issues are becoming perhaps even more challenging? What should be strengthened?
Yeah, no, that's, a very great question. So look, I think, you know, the issue behind the issue really, Melissa, is, you know, I think if the last 10 years really, you know, we've done a brilliant job at understanding the complexities of food systems and really, you know, where we need to innovate. I think there's a pretty good consensus really that we've got a lot of work to do. I used to think we had a lot longer, but I think what we do in the next decade is really crucial. And so really this next decade has to be, if the first decade of HLP was really predominantly about gaining an understanding and doing some policy work, the next decade really has to see an acceleration of implementation in the solution space. So we've really got to accelerate the innovation and some of those solutions if we're really going to make a difference for future generations in terms of food security and having a sustainable planet to live on. So I think in terms of our work, I mean, I look at what the committee did in response to COVID-19, we were asked to put a paper together in 3 days, right? And so because, you know, so when the house is on fire, you don't go looking to invent a new fire extinguisher. You really have to use what you've got in earnest. And so we, you know, we actually, through the different time zones with the HLP, we actually worked on a live document for 3 days through the time zones. And we came out, we feel we came up with some, I think, really timely recommendations around social, particularly social protection mechanisms in the event of the pandemic. Since then, we've updated the issues paper, and we're going to do that again. We've had side events, and we'll be doing updating that again. So I think we need to think about using, we already have a process there, the issues paper process for more urgent issues. I think we need to perhaps use that a bit more in earnest. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we really, I think one of the things that, you know, looking at the, when we put the global narrative stuff together, really recognizing that, you know, to make progress towards, you know, 10 years out from sustainable development goals, we really need to do a better job at measuring and modeling things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we have, if we have a model to, we can model the world's climate, why can't we model the world's food supply chain, you know? And you know, imagine if we had that, then we could then measure progress against different policy measures, and we could also do foresight and scenario planning. We could say, you know, we could compare different levers in terms of policy and say, well, you know, if we could do that, then this is perhaps where we get to. And so I think the whole data and modeling aspect is something that we need. So that's something we're going to be looking at in the forthcoming data paper, which we're looking at. So that's going to be a big function there, is to how do we you know, measure progress more, and how can we use it for foresighting?
Okay. No, that's actually really interesting. And I'd agree. I mean, when people compare science policy interfaces, obviously the IPCC for climate change is often drawn upon. And there, of course, they have made use very much of those large scale modeling approaches. But not necessarily in combination with the kind of located context specific knowledge that you've also been talking about for the HLP. So somehow that combination is the sweet spot that I think one probably needs to be aiming at in terms of really building evidence for food system transformation in real time. And this combination of the kind of deeper dive evidence issues papers with the rapid response work. So it's been really interesting to hear all of that. So Martin, my final question for you is, given what you've said and based on your experience with the HLP, do you think a new science policy interface for food security and nutrition is necessary? This is obviously a point of debate as the UNFSS conference comes into being later this year. There's discussion about it. But the question really to you would be, actually, do we already have one with the HLPE? Do we need a new one? What would be the point?
Yeah. So look, I mean, I think, you know, we've tried to respond. You know, we just did a recent op-ed and open letter really kind of talking about that. I mean, if I use the agroecology and other innovations as an example, I couldn't think of another group that would be able to deal with that complexity in such an inclusive way. You know, you think about CFS, it has, you know, 138 member countries, you know, across Joint Secretariat, FAO, IFAD, World Food Programme. It's got, you know, a very mature civil society mechanism, which has really been built in from the get-go, as well as a private sector mechanism. So I think, you know, it is, you know, we've talked about this fire extinguisher example in CFS, actually. You know, when the house is on fire, you don't go and try and invent another mechanism. You've actually got a fantastically, you know, legitimate, effective and transparent existing mechanism. It is a forum for policy innovation. It's you know, kind of multi-discipline in terms of its business. It's science informs. It's, you know, there's already a deliberate body there that is informing policy both at international and then filtered down to national level. So my view very strongly would be to build on what you've got here in this inclusive process with the right of food right at the heart of it, and to build, to move faster. We know there's always room for improvement. HLP and CFS know they need to innovate themselves, but to start all that again and to rebuild would take the next decade doing that, really. It's really crazy. So we need to get behind what we've already got and supercharge it, move faster, be part of the innovation, and certainly not try and reinvent the wheel, in my view.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And I think you've made a very clear case indeed for that point, for not reinventing, for strengthening what one has. And Martin, I'd like to thank you for an extremely honest and candid conversation, both about the challenges ahead, but the opportunities, the capabilities that the HLP has in addressing them. So this is a science policy interface, clearly chaired by somebody who's reflective about its weaknesses as well as its strengths. And that surely is a good basis to move ahead in a world where food security and nutrition challenges are only going to get more complex, more complicated, and even more controversial. So thank you so much for talking with me today. And I hope I've very much enjoyed the conversation. And I hope we can look forward to further great successes for the HLP into the future.
Thank you very much, Melissa. Pleasure.